Welcome to the Indian Newsling Podcast.
Today I have Professor Vijay Naidu with me. I am here in Fiji, in Suva, and Professor Naidu has gracefully agreed to be interviewed. Professor Naidu is a professor at USP and has been there for a long time in the area of migrant and development. He's a migrant and development scholar. In the early years, he studied Girmit era and the impact on Girmitiers and emergence of Fiji as a multi-ethnic and multi-racial society. In that early era, he wrote a book, Violence of Indenture in Fiji. And it was one of the first books that was put together before the vogue of Girmit era came. So Professor Naidu, would you like to share the research you had done on this book, Violence of Indenture in Fiji?
Thank you. The research was based on oral accounts of about 16 former Girmitiers, because oral history at that time was being used to both supplement as well as question written scholarly works. And that is what I tried to do.
And what were your findings?
Well, my findings were that the majority of the Girmitiers indicated that they were misled about the pay that they were going to receive in Fiji, the nature of the work that they were going to do. They were told that it won't be very difficult. Chinichalo, Chaime, was one of the kind of things that the Arkatis and recruiters told them. And they also were told that it is not far from Fiji. It's somewhere in the Bay of Bengal or in Malaysia or someplace close by. And in addition to that, they were not told about the punishments, physical and prison, punishments that was part of the labor laws and immigration laws of Fiji at that time.
Right. So just for our listeners' sake, those that don't know what Girmit is and what Girmit is, do you just want to introduce that?
Yes.
When the first ship came and
yes.
All that?
Well, Girmit basically means a contract. And so the Girmit means contract laborers. And they were supposed to come to Fiji and work for 5 years, after which they could pay their own way back to India. Or alternatively, they stayed on for another 5 years and supposedly got a free passage back to India. Mm. So that was the arrangement. They had no choice of employers, so Girmit, and they weren't informed of that. And as I mentioned, they were not informed about the details of the contract, which included corporal punishment, being slapped, kicked, and whipped with a chabuk, and also the fact that the indenture contracts could be extended for the period that they were away in prison. So none of these they were informed at. And they were not informed about the task work. Mm. And basically what it meant, instead of getting 1 shilling a day for men on average and 9 pence for women a day work, the majority of indentured laborers until very late, well into the early 20th century, did not receive the full amount of money each week.
Gosh.
So they earned, you know, they worked from dawn to dusk, all the way from Monday to Saturday half day, for what they earned. And so, you know, these were very challenging times.
Mm. So, so the first ship came, Leonidas, came to Fiji in the...
It came in 1879.
1879, and the last one came in...
1916.
But arrived...
To the official record.
Yes, but
arrived in early 1917.
But the museum archives sort of show that arrived in Fiji in 1917. So the Girmitiers are here for about 39 years.
Easily.
Yeah. So they started. So there potentially could have been a whole generation that had come, served Girmit,
yes.
And died even before the Girmit actually finished.
Yes.
So this concept of blackbirding is something you've just mentioned, where they were deceived to come. Did those that you interviewed give how that came about?
Well, let me just go back to the term blackbirding.
Mm.
Blackbirding is actually referred to with the early periods of the Pacific labor migration, when Solomon Islanders, Ni Vanuatu and Kiribati were deceived and put under the hatch of their ships and brought to Fiji and Queensland. To work in the plantations.
And
they had an extremely hard time in the country. And according to Ken Gillian, one of the earliest writers on Girmit, they died like flies in the 1880s.
Mm.
So with respect to my respondents, who were by this stage, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s, they remembered, you know, a few things. One of which was being deceived, and they didn't know where Fiji was.
Mm.
It was thousands of kilometers away from India, and it took 3 months by sailing ships to come to Fiji, and a month by steamers. So it was quite a horrendously long journey for people who came from the Gangetic Plains. Uttar Pradesh, Bihar, and the Madras region.
Mm.
Many of these inland people had never seen the sea,
let
alone sailed in ships.
Mm. And also something that is interesting to note, I suppose, is the Punjabis and the Gujaratis that came to Fiji, who are very much part of the Fiji Indian community now, or Indo-Fijian community now, didn't come as part of the Girmit era. Is that correct?
Largely, that's correct. They did have a small number of Punjabis and Rajputs and Khatris who came, or Chhatris who came during the indenture period. But in 1907, there was a bit of a riot in Lambasa, and many of them were then, taken away and sent to other plantations. And when they were seen as making more trouble for the plantation owners and the government, they were deported back to India.
Mm.
So the majority of Girmitiers who came through Calcutta were of North Indian Hindu origin, 80% or more. There were a smattering of Nepalis and Pathans as well. And the majority of the people from the south were Tamils. Followed by Telugu and Malayalam speaker.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? Sorry, the bit that I find really interesting is how did Fiji Hindi arise, and also the caste system we don't have in Fiji. Would you like, and given that you are from the South Indian, from a South Indian descent, you may have some insight on that.
No, thank you. A few things happened. One, the Fiji Bath, Fiji Hindi, emerged out of the plantation experience.
Mm.
And Fiji Hindi is largely based on Bhojpuri, which is a North Indian dialect. But it also incorporates elements of English as well as Fijian. Mm. And that became the lingua franca during the plantation era, and then continued in the post-colonial and post-colonial period. Mm. The South Indians who came after 1900 spoke, of course, you know, their own languages, but they were compelled to learn Fiji Hindi, which they did over time.
Mm.
But because they came later, they had much more social pressure on them, and their suicide rates were always larger than of the North Indian counterparts.
Mm.
But over time, I think there was a closer interaction within these groups of people, and over time, intermarriage between North Indians and South Indians became increasingly commonplace.
Mm.
With respect to caste, you know, we had, you know, the majority of the people who came were of lower and middle agricultural castes, with smaller numbers of Brahmins and, you know, warrior castes like Rajputs.
Mm.
As well as Pathans. But because people were taken into deports in India, in the upcountry deports, and onward to Madras and Calcutta before that, they were mixed together irrespective of their castes. And see, in the caste system, you were not to eat food cooked by people of lower castes. You were not to have commensal relationships with them. And so all of that began to disintegrate in those depots. And then in the 3 month sailing ship, further deterioration occurred. And irrespective of you, who you are, as explained by Totaram Sanadiye, that actually, you know, Brahmins were given topaz work. Which is, you know, picking up the rubbish and excreta of other people, which is not done thing in India. And then after that, they went to the deport, quarantine deport in Nukalau, where once again they were mixed. And the common identity they had was twofold. One is they were coolies, and two, they were Jahaji Bhais, or Jahaji Baina, because they had come on the same ships. So this caste order began to disintegrate. And of course, in the plantations too, people were living in the same lines, in dormitory-like structures, rooms, 7 feet by 10 feet, without much privacy. And there was a shortage of women.
Mm.
You know, always, rule was 40 women to 100 men.
Gosh.
But oftentimes that wasn't fulfilled because it was always more difficult to recruit women.
And
they were abducted, they were, you know, lied to, they were kept overnight, so they couldn't go home. Anyway, a whole lot of women came in. People who came as married couples and some with children were always a minority. The majority were young people. From my study, I reckon more than 80% were below the age of 30. And so, you know, the whole caste system with the elders reinforcing values and norms associated with caste began to disintegrate. So in Fiji today, there is some recognition of Brahmins being Pandits, but it's no big deal. And, you know, some of the Singhs call themselves Thakurs and things, but they don't own any land in Fiji. So it's no significance. So in the early days, you know, they knew who were lower caste people, who were Dalits. But as the generations moved on, we don't know who's a Chamar, who's a, you know, Dalit.
So, basically, the identity is an Indo-Fijian.
Yes.
And with that, whatever is common was left, and what was divisive went out of the window.
Largely.
And that was probably because the community needed to be together.
Indeed.
Because they had someone that they were up against.
Yes.
And that that who they were up against was who?
Yes, well, it was the colonial authorities and the large sugar, Australian sugar company. Its name was Colonial Sugar Refinery Company. And a few years ago, I checked, you know, the standing of this committee in Australia. It's apparently then, in about early 2000, it was the ninth largest corporation.
Wow, so it still exists.
It exists. So they were the dominant partner in the with the colonial government. And we had a white ruling class in Fiji who dictated colonial policies. And for the Grimitias, it was a struggle for izzat, for self-respect.
And izzat is, you know, all that one has.
Gee.
Honor.
Bilkul. And so the net effect of that was that, you know, post-Girmit, the Indian migrants and the Indo-Fijian descendants had to struggle for basic rights of being British subjects in a British colony. So there was discrimination against them during Girmit and post-Girmit. So, for example, they were lived in segregated former coolie settlements. They also were denied education by the colonial authorities. So the education that we received were either through the Christian missionaries or through the Hindu, Muslim cultural organizations. Well, incidentally, when you talked about this common struggle, I'd also like to add, there was also a coming together very closely during the Girmit period of Hindus and Muslims. They shared festivals together and the dividing lines became blurred. They got resurrected post 1920s when there were attempts to bring in Maulvis and Pandits from India to re-establish, you know.
But in saying that, I recall as a student, as a young girl in Fiji, that, you know, there wasn't that much division. There wasn't, there was, everybody had their own community groups, but everybody celebrated things together. There was a great sense of togetherness. And there wasn't, and there were intermarriages between Punjabis and North Indians particularly. But I know Gujaratis went overseas and got their brides and grooms, and but the rest, they were still had that very strong Indian identity.
Yes, and of course that also was a product of the racism, because colonial society was not inclusive. They talked about the Indian problem in Fiji, and we were, if you like, the other of the colonial establishment. So all through our colonial history, there was this almost constant struggle about getting our dignity and about getting our self-respect and the right to be represented in the colonial legislature, the right to be involved in decision-making that affected Indian and Indo-Fijian people. And so that's our background. And through that common struggle, this common identity, if you like, even racialized identity, emerged. You know, as you know, in North India at that time, and South India, there was no common languages, there was lack of interaction. And of course, the ordinary peasant in North India would not have known his counterpart in South India. They met here in Fiji.
Isn't that amazing? That's really, really lovely, though.
Yes.
You know, it's a good story.
Yes.
Now, one of the what we haven't talked about is the indigenous Fijian. How did they feature in all of this?
So when the Fijians were actually quite active in adjusting to the European intrusion in the country, but Europeans actually brought all kinds of diseases with them, and the indigenous population actually declined to about, from around between 300,000 and 400,000 in the 17th century to about 84,000 in the 1900s, because they did not have the immunity to ordinary European diseases such as flu, measles, and other diseases, and that was compounded by warfare that had increased amongst themselves, but this time using European muskets and rifles that causes larger casualty, as well as the spread of venereal diseases. So the Fijian population actually plummeted quite seriously during the pre and initial colonial era. So indigenous Fijians, the first governors, saw them as a race of people who were likely to become extinct. And so he tried to adopt policies where the indigenous Fijian tribal structure and rule by chiefs was continued. So a system of indirect rule was established. But interestingly enough, the chiefs were not asked about Indian labor migrants. So when the Indians began to come in ever larger numbers, and altogether between 1879 and 1916, or early 1917, something like 60,500 Indian migrants were brought to this country. And so in one of the initial Council of Chiefs meeting, which Governor Gordon established, the chiefs objected and wanted to know how many Indians were coming and whether they were going to be settled here permanently, and what would be their future in Fiji, and what would be the future of indigenous Fijians. So they asked these questions. And of course, the answers they got were rather vague. So this was the situation. So indigenous Fijians were not consulted, but plantation agriculture required large amounts of land and large amounts of labor. So land was actually over time taken from indigenous Fijians, and the labor initially provided by Pacific Islanders was displaced by Indian labor migrants from India because it was more stable and reliable source. And so that where the relationship began.
Right. And but what was the relationship between the Fijians and the Indians, for example?
Well, you know, as I tried to mention, Camille, in the early period there was segregation. So the plantations were total institutions separated from Fijian villages. And in fact, the colonial authorities pass rules that Indians were not allowed to stay in villages, and that if any Fijian, indigenous Fijian, played host to them and entertained escaped Indian Girmit laborers, then that person was likely to be prosecuted. So there was this segregation directed at Indians, not allowed to be mixing with indigenous Fijians.
So there was a bar.
There was, absolutely. Yes. And so
I don't think this fact is known.
No. And one of the reasons for the fraught relationship between indigenous Fijians, Tokay, and Indo-Fijians is this background of segregation and distrust, the divide and rule you have mentioned, that continues to affect our relationships.
It manifests itself in what we saw as the various schools.
Yes.
That has happened. Look, Dr. Vijay, Professor Vijay, I could talk to you for a very long time, and I think you have so much to share, which a lot of people in the world who are interested in Fiji, in the Fiji Indians, and the background to the whole to what politics is in Fiji now. This background is just so important to understand where Fiji is today, and may even give a solution to how we can provide a backdrop that would create more understanding, more harmony in the years to come, if this is all documented properly, which many people have attempted to do. Now, before we finish, I'd like you to just give a brief explanation about your relationship with the various other authors on this topic, like Dr. Bridge Lal, for example.
No, thank you very much, and what you've said is so true. It's so important for us to understand our history and our present situation before we think about, you know, more policies towards national integration, common identity, and better inter-ethnic relationships in this country. Well, see, the earliest authors of Grimmitt history, besides those who carried out investigations in the number of commissions of investigation on Grimmitt conditions, including the good missionaries, Reverend Pearson and Andrews, the initial authors of Grimmitt were these two persons who wrote in the late 1950s and early 1960s. These were Dr. Ken Gillian and Dr. Adrian Mayer. So Ken was based at ANU Australia, and Dr. or Professor Adrian Mayer was from the London School of Oriental and African Studies, an anthropologist and an historian. And that was followed by someone like Ahmad Ali, who wrote. And then there was Shiv Prasad, who unfortunately from Lambasa, who did a research paper that got published by the then Pacific Social Science Association. Shiv unfortunately was murdered in Mangere, you know, a few years back.
In New Zealand.
And we can talk about his what happened to him later on. But, you know, at that time, Shiv Prasad would have been someone who wrote around the time that I began my work, and then there was my work. So that's the relationship. Of course, Bridge Lal was my contemporary, and Bridge Lal has done the most extensive work, and he's the preeminent Grimmitt scholar. And he, of course, looked at all the more than 40,000 files on North Indian migrants, and, you know, every detail about them, their age, where they were recruited, and their caste background, and what they had done, all is there, you know, well, in Bridge Lal's work.
He did cross my path, but unfortunately, there has been no interview with him in this manner, in a podcast manner. But, you know, you are here with us, and this is just the first of many podcasts we'll have with you. And thank you so much for making time and doing this with me in very, very short notice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Indian Newslink podcast.